potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Spiral, Those Who Wish Me Dead, Profile, Finding You, and The Djinn. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring King Kong from 1976 on a new Blu-ray. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big news that is stirring up a lot of dust this week is the lifting of mask mandates in multiple states and the new changes to the CDC rules on COVID guidelines. And what does that mean specifically to movie theaters? And the basics of it is the CDC came out and said that people that are fully vaccinated no longer need to be masked or follow social distancing guidelines. Just because the CDC has relaxed its rules or changed its rules may or may not have an effect on you personally. For example, I live in Ohio and they're not lifting the mask mandate until June. So you have to, first of all, follow whatever your local rules are. Now, of course, this means that fully vaccinated people could come to a movie theater and they could fill it up all the way. I think there's still some cautions about very, very close quarters, but pretty much it's very relaxed in terms of fully vaccinated people. Let me tell you what it does not mean for theaters. It does not mean that no one has to wear a mask, or it does not mean that no one should wear a mask. If you're not vaccinated, you should still follow these guidelines until you are fully vaccinated. The whole purpose of these guidelines are to protect you and other people who are not vaccinated. The other thing, this does not mean that it's okay to lie about being vaccinated. And this is, I think, where the rubber's going to meet the road for a lot of people. There's a lot of people who just don't want to get vaccinated, but then they also don't want to be restricted. And so they're going to lie about it. And there's no way of looking at somebody to tell whether or not they're vaccinated. So it's the honor system, which isn't going to work because that never works for people. That's why I vaccinated. That's why we vaccinated ourselves as a family. And until we're all vaccinated, including the kids, we're keeping our bubble because I don't trust anyone else. So if you are unmasked and unvaccinated in a room with other people who are unmasked and unvaccinated, you absolutely can still get COVID. There is no difference between you getting COVID now than you could have gotten it a year ago. It's the same thing that was a danger last year that caused these surges, is you didn't know you had it for days, if not weeks. Now, my personal guess is that there's going to be a surge this summer, and it's going to be concentrated in populations and gatherings where people are not vaccinated and aren't wearing masks. Because I know that there's going to be a lot of people out there going to be like, well, I'm not going to get a vaccine, but I'm not going to mask either. And you're the ones, you're just doing it to yourself at this point. You're putting yourself at risk. In the end, if you've been vaccinated, you can pretty much kind of go back to normal. But just don't be a jerk about it. Ultimately, if you're vaxxed and you are exposed, you're probably going to have even more antibodies. Who knows? I mean, the future favors those who are vaccinated at this point. Ultimately, though, there's a question about movies and how long it's going to take to return. Because I think there's more to it than just lifting the guidelines. I think people have to get comfortable of going to the theaters again. I think you're going to have to overcome some of these hybrid models, like what HBO Max is doing and what Disney Plus is doing. And these short theatrical windows that Universal and Paramount have negotiated, those are going to continue to make an impact. And there's going to be a whole segment of the population that has gotten used to being away from theaters for a year and aren't really itching to return. I mean, that's not popular to say, but there is a huge acknowledgement that there's people who are not going to be running back to the movie theaters because there's so many options online. And that's something that was happening anyways. I've been saying for months that this is not going to flip back like a light switch suddenly in June and have tons of people back in the theaters, and you're not going to maybe pack the houses. And then on top of it, you won't see people stampeding back unless they have a reason. And you had a little bit of that with Godzilla versus Kong. But even as well as that did, that still was nowhere near pre-pandemic numbers for a breakout hit. Ultimately, the big test is going to be Black Widow. We're going to see if arguably one of the most popular franchises running today is going to have the numbers for the theatrical box office. And if it's going to be viable for Disney Plus's premier access. That's the one I think everybody's looking at. I mean, yeah, Fast and Furious, I think, is going to be an impact too. You know, but if Fast and Furious comes out this summer and doesn't make $100 million its opening weekend, what does that mean for theaters? Because by that time, these things that have been lifted will have been lifted and people would have ostensibly gone back to normal. And if Black Widow is able to make $300 million on Disney Premier Access, that's going to cause Disney to rethink how they do stuff in the future. We are not yet at the point to say this is going to 100% go back, because I think that they're still trying to serve that population that doesn't want to go back to the theaters. And may have nothing to do with the pandemic. It just might be that people don't like dealing with cell phones. I have a friend online that he was talking about going to the theater last week. And what was the thing he was complaining about? There was a guy in the front row with his cell phone. And this is something that has been fostered because you now have an entire year of people staying at home, learning to surf and half pay attention to a movie. And so they're inclined to go on their phone even more than they were before. It's not an optimistic thing to say, but movies may not completely return to theaters because you can't get that genie completely back in the bottle. We're going to see. I mean, I'd like to see things kind of go back, but I am also fully aware that, the landscape has changed over the last year and it's not 100% just because of COVID anymore. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to talk about is The Forever Purge, which is coming to theaters on July 2nd.
The purge is over, please!
No, it ain't.
This is insane. Nobody hear the sirens?
There's no crime anymore. Anything goes.
You rich can't hide behind your steel walls no more.
Powerless. How's that feel?
It's the real purge.
The Forever Purge!
Hurry up! They're coming!
I'm kind of tired of the Purge movies. They did a TV series, and I mean, it's a one-note idea. And I mean, there are some interesting things they had, but ultimately, the Purge series is very one-dimensional. There's a lot of things you could do, but we're like something like six movies in, and it's still just all crimes, even murder. There's still not even an acknowledgement that there are worse things than murder, and there are other victims who are not just the people who die. I can't believe they've gotten this many movies out of this franchise. Who knows? I mean, they might looks like they're at least trying to say something about, but I don't know. The next one I want to talk about is Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which opens in theaters on September 24th.
Every decision we ever make. Who do we leave behind? And how do we leave them? Waiting in the darkness for the rescuer who never comes. Welcome back, Eddie Brock. It's been a long time.
Now, look, I never followed Venom and Carnage in the comics. I do know that people felt that they kind of ruined them in the movie, but Venom did very well. You don't hear it in the trailer, but there's parts of the trailer that are very funny that almost make it like a buddy cop movie, only the one buddy is a possessive demon that can eat people's heads. So it looks like it's going to be borderlining on being a little bit silly, but I guess that's okay for this franchise, and I'm just looking to hope to see an interesting sci-fi slash horror movie. And I think we could get there, but we need more to see about this movie, or at least see the film, before I know whether that's going to be 100% successful. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Those Who Wish Me Dead and the Djinn.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Those Who Wish Me Dead. Angelina Jolie plays a firefighting forest ranger who finds a kid in the woods on the run from the assassins who killed his father.
Hey! Stop! I'm not gonna hurt you.
I want to see where the blood's coming from.
It's not my blood.
You in trouble? Anyone else in trouble?
My dad said if anything happened, I should find someone I could trust. Are you someone I can trust?
This is one of those movies that is getting a hybrid release. It's both in theaters and on HBO Max. It's a little bit different than the last two we had because I don't think it's as big of a movie. It's certainly not as big as Kong versus Godzilla or Mortal Kombat. I think it's more along the lines of stuff like The Little Things or Judas and the Black Messiah, which were both hybrid releases on HBO Max and in theaters, but they didn't exactly break any records and no one really noticed them on the box office. The thing that's interesting about this is how they're marketing this movie. They're marketing it like it's a big action movie. They're marketing like the movie Firestorm. Do you remember that film from the 90s? It starred Howie Long. There was this hot minute when Howie Long, football player Howie Long, was trying to become a movie star. And I remember the tagline for that movie was, "Go Long." He was like a marshal who was in the middle of a forest fire and he's trying to save people or fight the bad guys. I don't even remember who the bad guys were in that movie. But that was a bona fide action movie. Those Who Wish Me Dead is not. Even though they're marketing it that way. And I think that that's a mistake on Warner Brothers' part, because when you actually watch the movie, it's very different. It's written and directed by Taylor Sheridan, who's best known for doing what I would describe as modern day westerns. He wrote Hell or High Water. That was essentially, it was bank robbers come to a town and they get pursued by the sheriff. And that's a very Western mentality, but it takes place in the modern world. Another one that he wrote and directed was Wind River. That one is also very much a Western movie where the mystery of outlaws who attacked a woman. And that's kind of his shtick. So this is a Western. It's, if we pardon the pun, it's a slow burn. And it's about Angelina Jolie, but there's other characters in there that get a decent amount of screen time to the point that she will disappear from the movie for 15 minutes here and there. And I don't, that's not a complaint. I mean, that's just the pacing of the movie. Because essentially what it is there's some crime group that, this guy who was an accountant is going to blow the whistle on, and he and his son try and skip town because the assassins are coming to him and they get the dad and the kid goes running off in the woods. And Angelina Jolie has this weight on her background because she had an incident where she didn't direct the people for a fire to go to the right place and people died. And she's dealing with the guilt of that. So it's struggling with a lot of this regret and angst and problems that had taken place in the past. And I mean, she does a good job acting and she's certainly physically formidable for it. I mean, but even then, it's not an action movie. And if you watch the trailers, you'd think that it's wall to wall forest fire. And it's not. I mean, the forest fire is, I don't know, maybe about 20-25% of the movie. And I say all this because I still think it's a well-made movie. The character's a little bit overly macho for my taste. There's like a scene in the beginning where they're making fun of, you know, a hipster guy who's in town who's got like a beard with a, you know, mustache wax, and he's got a bun, a man bun, and all the firemen are making fun of him. Because, I mean, it's a little dripping in testosterone at that point, which I'm like, really, can't we get beyond that? And they think they overwrench the Angelina Jolie backstory of her guilt and anguish that she's feeling for her mistakes in the past. But I mean, it balances out well, and it tells a realistic story where these people are going after somebody. They're trying to do their job. It's just their job is murder and assassination. One thing I do think that's neat about it is it shows where people cut corners. That is the whole point, is these assassins had to kill somebody in like Fort Lauderdale and Jacksonville. And They didn't have time to get there before the people went on the run. And they're like, there should have been two teams, but it was cheaper to send one. And I thought that that was an interesting aspect in sort of like workplace politics, that even assassins complain because they're understaffed. So it has these interesting elements that are comparable to real life in a very unique way. But overall, it's that basic Western of this person trying to protect a kid who is on the run from the guys in the black hats. And in that sense, it works. But it's not a big action movie, so don't go in expecting that. And I think that you'll enjoy it better that way. So I'm going to have to say that it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is The Djinn. A mute boy is left alone and makes a wish to a devilish djinn that threatens to steal his soul.
What do you think?
We start thinking about the things we're missing. We forget about the things we have.
Oh. Now if you gotta take a shower before bed, I'll be home before you get up.
This is another slow burn, and it's a challenge to find a trailer for this for the radio because there's very little actual spoken dialogue in it. There's a lot going on, but it's about a mute boy and a creature that doesn't speak haunting him, basically. And the backstory is the mother of this kid is not there, and there's a tragedy involved with that, and his father's trying to stay with him and be a dad, but also he's working. And then the kid's home for, you know, overnight because the father works at a radio station, is doing the third shift as a DJ, and takes place in the late 80s. And it's about the kid finding this book that allows him to conjure this djinn. And for those who don't know, djinn, D-J-I-N-N is how you spell this. It's an old word that is the origin of the term genie. You know, the whole Aladdin and his lamp, rubbing a lamp and getting a genie, and then you have these wishes, and there's always a twist, or somehow it comes back to bite you. That's what a djinn is. That's the original term. So it's got this ancient nature to it. And it's got some really decent suspense to it. It's well made, and it's creepy, and it has some really good shots. They managed to do a lot with very little space and still make it interesting. But overall, it's this kid being chased by this demon for an hour. It's a very simple story, but it works well, and it shows the grief that the kid has and what he's dealing with. And the kid carries the movie on his shoulders, and I think he does a good job. And it, of course, has the things you'd expect a genie would do, you know, come back to haunt you. And there may be some other ramifications. Wishing is a dangerous task to get into. And I think that's the point of this movie. It's about cherishing what you have and not wishing for stuff that has gone. And that's the ultimate message. And that's the ultimate message of stories about djinn or genies anyways. And I think that works. It comes across. It's an effectively made thriller. You know, if you like independent films, it's out there in theaters, and I believe you can get it on demand. And if you can't get it on demand, you should be able to get it on demand very soon. It's from IFC, and their stuff goes into the on-demand services much quicker than your normal films. So I'm going to have to say The Djinn kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Spiral and Finding You. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie in the lineup, and that is Spiral from the Book of Saw. Chris Rock stars in this reboot of the Saw franchise, playing a marginalized detective who faces a serial killer targeting dirty cops.
Whoever did this has another motive.
They're targeting cops.
This is gonna go sideways fast.
Someone's out there pulling all the strings. You want to play games?
It was the first several Saw films I actually thought were quite well done. But by the time they got to 6 and 7, it just kind of started to circle the drain, and they stopped making money because they'd release one every Halloween. And then they tried to reboot it with the movie Jigsaw, which was not a good movie. Jigsaw missed the point of the original Saw films, and movies like Hostel and Saw, while they popularized the torture porn genre, they followed rules and morality. If you go back to the original Saw, the character of Jigsaw, he's got cancer, and he's putting people in these situations that say, look, you have been shackled by your own inabilities to live your life to the fullest. You need to break through this, and if you can get past this, you may suffer, but you'll be a better person for it. And while it's grisly and violent and gross and graphic, that tracks through like the first four or five Saw films. And Darren Lynn Bousman directed Saw 2 through like 5, I think. That's the guy who directs Spiral. So they're going back to the original people who worked on it. And I thought that Saw 2 actually also follows a moral code. You may not agree with it, but at least it has its own rules. By the time you get to Saw 6 and 7, it just abandoned those rules and it just turns into innocent people being put into these torture devices. One of the things that this movie does is it brings that back. The whole point is the people he's going after have done bad things. Like the first guy he goes after, the first victim they have in there, is a detective who lies on the stand and gets people put in jail. The bad apples, you know, so to speak, in the force. And one of the things that the characters do is the character of Chris Rock, he plays a detective who turned in somebody for committing a crime in the field. And of course, that makes him not a fan with criminals because criminals don't care. But it also doesn't make him a friend of cops because cops protect their own. And he's always got to look over his shoulder. And I think that's an interesting framework for this, but he's still the good guy trying to do the right thing, even though the right thing is putting him in danger in the field. And I think that's actually a real interesting place to go. On top of it, even though, you know, it's got Chris Rock in it and he's the main character and he's black. I didn't know if you knew that, but they don't make it a racial thing. And I think that's a smart move because it's very easy for somebody to polarize that. But the whole point is this movie's not doing that. It's not a black versus white movie. It's showing that a system that is corrupt can lead to more corruption. And in a situation like this where people can protect their own, they're unwilling or less likely to turn in those around them. And I think that makes... it certainly brings it up for discussion. I think that that's something that should certainly be talked about. You need to address the racial thing too, but I think it's something that needs to be talked about outside of racial issues as well. And that's one of the things that I think Chris Rock brings to the movie, but I think he does a good job. Also, I got to say this, Chris Rock, he's known as a comedian, of course, and he's done dramatic stuff. He was in New Jack City, and at one point he actually name checks New Jack City in the movie, which I thought was kind of clever. But he has some acting chops. He can do drama. And I thought he was kind of great in this movie as the hard-boiled detective. And yeah, he'll say funny things, but it's more of him saying something very dry and dead on. And that's humorous that somebody would just say that in that situation. But it's as dark as you can get. I'd love to see him do more. I mean, this is a much better reboot of Saw than you got with Jigsaw. And it sets the stage to do more and enrich the story. And I mean, there's stuff that's predictable, and I guess certain things. It wasn't a 100% surprise on a lot of this, but I thought it was an effective movie. And I got to say, yeah, it's violent and it's gory, but you expect that with a Saw movie. I mean, if your favorite movie's Pride and Prejudice and that's the kind of stuff you like to watch, you may not want to check this one out. But if you're wanting to see a return to form for Saw, you should check out Spiral, because it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Finding You. A girl spends a year abroad in Ireland, where she falls in love with a movie star also in town to make a film.
What brings you to Ireland?
A semester abroad program at my college. Back at Rush.
Jeez, I've gotten this far without being bothered, all right?
What are you doing here?
Dragon!
I'll be staying here for the next few months while we film.
Billy! Oh. I heard
heard Beckett Rush is at the airport. Do you like him?
Not really my type.
It's so good to have you.
We're running a bed and breakfast.
Would you mind taking this to the gentleman in the corner?
You?
He's stalking me.
Why is Beckett Rush in the dining room?
What?
Apparently this is based on a book. And it's a romance. And it's funny, I showed the trailer to my wife and I said to her, I go, you'll probably like this movie. It's her kind of movie. It's this light romance and it's silly and whimsical and it has jokes in it. And it's charming as all get out there in Ireland and it's beautiful and there's gold in your slippers and rainbows in the air. And but I have to admit, I did not like this movie for some very specific reasons. First of all, the movie has elements of making a movie in it. And yet they get a lot of stuff wrong. And there's stuff behind the scenes, like the romantic lead guy, his dad is his manager, and he's trying to manipulate this relationship he has with this girl. And they're, but I'm like, you don't do that during the production of a movie. You ramp that stuff up when the movie's going to come out. A movie like that he's making, which is an effects blockbuster, that thing's 6 months from seeing the light of day. Anyway, so why are you caring about what you're trending on social media? So it gets a lot of that wrong, and they should know better because they make movies for a living. Also on top of it, the girl, she has so many storylines. She's got the storyline when she's falling in love with this guy, and she's got the storyline when she's following her brother's footstep who had gone to Ireland and died after he got home, and she's been paired up with this woman at this old folks home where she has to relate to her. And there's this guy, this old drunk who plays a fiddle, who teaches her how to open up as a musician. And I'm just like, oh my God, there's like more endings to this movie than Lord of the Rings. It just keeps going on and on and on. And I'm like, pick a story. And I understand you want to have some depth. And that's how you can do that in a book. You can have multiple storylines, but it just gets crowded. I'm just like, I am so tired of this girl's life because she's a pretentious, entitled nag. The casting's not great. The guy is not the greatest actor. The girl is okay. And then the girl looks, I mean, alarmingly similar to his on-set girlfriend, to the point that I pointed out to my wife in the trailer. I go, don't they look like the same person? And she's like, yeah. I mean, the only thing I liked about this movie, really, was it kind of let me discover Saoirse Monica Jackson, who's from Derry Girls. I mean, she's a real Northern Irish actress, and she's in that series, Derry. And so I started watching Derry Girls, and I'm like, that's brilliant. I think she's hilarious in it. She steals the show. I wish it was about her, but no, it's about her boring friend who comes over from America. So, look, I think if you like these Hallmark-type movies, you're going to like it. But, I mean, it's Irish. It looks so Irish, it's like not Irish. Does that make sense? I live in a town in Columbus, Ohio called Dublin. I mean, it's a suburb of Columbus. It's founded by a German guy, but it's called Dublin. And they really throw down behind the Irish stuff. They have like pubs and the Irish lettering on all their downtown stuff. And it felt like it was shot in downtown Dublin, Ohio, and not Dublin, Ireland. Because in Dublin, Ireland, they just have shops and they just have signs. Everything doesn't look like a tourist attraction. It looks like it was made so Americans would come over and visit Ireland. And as charming as that is, it just seems false in a way. It's sort of like watching a Peter Jackson movie, something like Bad Taste, that takes place in New Zealand, and that looks like the real New Zealand. Whereas The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings really don't. I mean, those are Hollywoodized versions of Middle Earth in New Zealand, not some janky little seaside town. Anyways, I did not like this movie at all. I'm going to say it sucked.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Profile and the home cinema roundup featuring 1976's King Kong.
King Kong, you know the name of King Kong, you know the fame of King Kong, 10 times as big as a man.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and wrap things up with the movie reviews. Let's talk about Profile. Based on a true story, a journalist from the UK goes undercover online as a girl seeking to convert to Islam and be recruited into ISIS.
Amy, you're the best journalist we have. I need something that's going to get people talking now.
I might have something.
I've been investigating a story about young women being recruited by extremists over social media.
This is brilliant.
How'd you make contact?
I created a fake profile, posing as a young convert to lure one of the recruiters to me.
He's calling.
And I'm going to record it all.
Come here. I'll give you everything you need.
A whole new life. A very happy one.
You have to believe me. It's paradise.
As I said in the description, this is based on a true story. It's about a French journalist who did this. And it, I mean, it's fictionalized. It's not a one-to-one account, but this French journalist wrote a book about it. I've not read the book, just, you know, for full disclosure. But they make it a British journalist. And we've read stories about this where these American and European girls will smuggle themselves over to Syria and then they are married off to ISIS fighters. It's a real thing that happens. And the recruitment goes on online. And so he's a Russian guy. He directed stuff like Night Watch, Timur Bekmambetov. He's a good director. He does it. His stuff's intense and dark. So this is based in reality, and it is about this woman who posed as a girl pretending to want to join ISIS, to convert to Islam, move over to Syria, and her whole thing is she's basically catfishing their recruitment guy, and one of the recruitment guy contacts her. And of course, it's like any recruitment. He sweet talks her. He's, oh no, it's great. It's wonderful. And you know, you're beautiful and it's a paradise over here and you're going to love it. And we're going to live in the greatest, nicest house and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And the woman starts to get drawn in. The character in this starts to get drawn in and actually sympathize with him, which is again, not an uncommon thing when you talk about, well, I mean, she's not a captive, but she's maybe falling a little bit too much into the role. And she's trying to take it as far as she could go because she wants to know how they get the girls there. Because just because you're identifying the profiles, another profile just pop up online. But if they know the system through which they're channeling the girls, essentially a version of human trafficking, they might be able to arrest people and stop this pipeline. Which it's not like it's like thousands of girls doing this, but they talk about there being several girls a month that this happens to. And it's pretty tense. It's done in a way, the way they shoot it, it's done like the movie Searching or Unfriended, where it all takes place on a computer screen. The next generation of found footage. And I don't mind it as much because it's not shaky cam. And I think you have to be a little more clever on this because you are restricted by this stuff. So I think it's actually well done in that gimmick setting of it all taking place on a computer screen. Because we all use Skype and we use Facebook and it's not any sort of hidden technology. If they don't do it right, it's going to look false to us. And so they really grounded in reality on this. It reveals this very real thing that happens that's kind of terrifying how it's done and the fact that it's done online. And they don't hammer this home, but there's a lot you can do with the internet. The internet still is the Wild West. And while there are regulations by country and company, there's a lot of stuff you can do until you get caught. These are real things that people can do. And it's kind of terrifying how just by a click of a button, you can connect to a Syrian terrorist. So, I mean, it's one of those movies that's going to stick with you more because you think about it and go, gosh, this is the kind of stuff that actually happens. It's effectively done, and it's worth seeing. So I'm going to have to say Profile kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on King Kong. In this 1976 remake, an oil company looks for petroleum on a mysterious island only to find a 50-foot-tall ape that natives worship as a god.
The American merchant vessel Petrox Explorer has just set sail from the port of Surabaya in search of oil.
We may be sailing into the history books.
And they will discover an uncharted island that is the home of the most incredible creature on the face of the earth. King Kong, with Jeff Bridges, Charles Grodin, and introducing Jessica Lange as the beauty who charmed the beast. And starring the eighth wonder of the world.
This is a brand new Blu-ray from Shout Factory, or Scream Factory, that's what they do their genre stuff on. And I've been talking about Shout Factory and Scream Factory for a couple of years now. They have some of the best stuff on DVD and Blu-rays. If you're into the genre stuff, if you're into science fiction and horror, especially stuff from like the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and maybe some of the stuff in the 90s, like vintage horror, they've got some great stuff. They've got a whole bunch of those British Hammer movies. They pretty much have the entire John Carpenter collection. And now they've got 1976's King Kong, which I'm going to go out and say is not a great movie. It was notable in 1976 because it was like at the time, I think it was the biggest movie. It was the widest release. It was the most expensive. And it's a big screen movie. And comparing it to the original 1933 King Kong, it's not as good. I mean, the 1933 King Kong is really still a great little movie. This one at times is trying to be too big. It's directed by the guy who did like stuff like Earthquake and The Towering Inferno. So he is the Roland Emmerich of the time. And it is a spectacle, though. Now, when it comes to the movie itself, it's big, it's overblown. It was supposed to have this mechanical ape in it that's really 50 feet tall, but that didn't work. So they had Rick Baker in a gorilla outfit. It doesn't quite hold up effects-wise because it's 45 years old, but it is a neat production. Because it has spectacle, and even though they have composite shots and it looks silly, and it is really racist too. I mean, the original movie's racist, but you expect that from a movie from 1933. But this one, it's the only black people in this movie, with the exception of one guy on the crew of the boat, are all natives dressed in ape costumes worshiping an ape, which I don't know if you can get much more racist than that, actually. But, you know, hey, it was the 70s. And also Jessica Lange plays the Fay Wray character. And she, as shallow as you can be, there's no depth whatever to her. She is just pretty and blonde, and that's it. To the point where I almost wonder if that was deliberate. I don't know whether it was just the male gaze of the time that didn't give her any sort of real character elements, or if they said, hey, let's just make her only about the beauty and nothing else. I mean, it could have been a brilliant, deliberate move, but I don't think it was. I think it was sexism of the 70s. And it's bizarre to think that, what, like 6 or 7 years later, she wins an Oscar for Tootsie. But she's a great actress. It's just, and she's beautiful in this, but that's all she is beautiful in this movie. Jeff Bridges also an interesting choice, where he's got this big, thick beard and this big, long hair. And I'm like, is he supposed to look apish, or is that just the 70s, you know, with all the hairstyles of the day? So that's one of the things I haven't quite wrapped my head around, about whether this was deliberately made to be corny and deliberately made to look absurd at times, or if that's just because it was the 70s. But it's still, it's a fun movie. It's a spectacle. It's absurd, silly spectacle. And you got to remember, this was made a year after Jaws. So they were using shark technology to do this, but it's fun. It's fun to watch. Now, the Blu-ray itself, what's neat about that is they have both the original theatrical version and the TV movie version of it, where they split it into two parts, played it over two nights. And the TV version's like 3 hours and 15 minutes. They add some stuff and they take some alternate takes and they edit out some of the profanity and stuff. I don't know if it really adds much more to it. There's a couple scenes here and there that give you a little bit of oomph, but pretty much the original theatrical version is there. But they do the TV version in the 2:35 remastered ratio, which looks great. I mean, the movie looks fantastic. And it also has a bunch of special features. It has a commentary. It has a whole discussion at a film festival with some of the surviving people involved. And then they have a bunch of interviews behind the scenes. And then they have like trailers and TV spots and radio spots. And the reason that's interesting is because apparently, when this has been put on disc before, it really didn't have very many special features. So Shout Factory went and got as best they could for a movie that's 45 years old. They got as much stuff as they could and put it in there. And Shout Factory usually puts some nice special features on there. So it's, for anyone who's a fan of the movie or wants to see it, it's absolutely worth checking out, just because it's the best presentation you're going to see of this movie, short of getting in a time machine and going back to 1976 and see it in Christmas time. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Army of the Dead, Dream Horse, and The Vigil. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.